Hey guys, before this episode begins, I just want to let you all know that I partnered with DAT Bootcamp to offer a 10% discount code on all bootcamp products. While studying for my DAT, I found DAT Bootcamp to be the best resource during my preparation. Their extensive review videos and practice exams are second to none. Use code DOD10 at checkout for a 10% discount, applicable to all programs Bootcamp has to offer. Again, that's DOD10 at checkout. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Dose of Dental podcast. The focus of this podcast is to share undergraduate and dental school experiences from dental students and dental professionals through valuable discussions. Through sharing the journeys and stories of current dental students and dental professionals, our goal is to help you find answers or guidance for your own pre-dental journeys. All right, hey guys, welcome back to the Dose of Dental podcast. We have a very special guest today. Her name is Kendra. She's a current D3 at the University of Pennsylvania School of Dental Medicine. So Kendra, how about you introduce yourself? Tell us where you're from, what you'd like to do.
Yeah, hi, my name is Kendra. I am at opera.dental on Instagram. That's where you may know me. I am, as he mentioned, a third year at the University of Pennsylvania School of Dental Medicine. I'm originally from the Poconos, but I did my undergrad in opera performance, so like vocal performance. It's like a college where I graduated in 2015. And then I took six gap years, during which I did Harvard University's pre-medical post-baccalaureate program. And then I ended up here. So when I'm not at dental school, I'm usually running with my little dog named Libby, who often makes an appearance on my Instagram. I've been enjoying checking out Philly, hanging out with friends, and doing a lot of running around the school.
Awesome. So, I mean, let's take it back. So you didn't even, you took six gap years, first of all.
Yeah.
So that, to some people, is like, holy crap. Why did you do that? How did you do that? So can we go from the beginning? So you did opera singing, essentially, was your thing at Ithaca. So take us back to that time. Like, what was your did you even know dentistry was like an option at that point?
No. No, I was completely uninterested in dentistry. If you had told me at that time that I would be a dentist, I would have laughed in your face and said, absolutely not. That sounds disgusting. I would have had no idea. And I probably would have been aghast with the thought of putting my hands in somebody's mouth, obviously with gloves. But that would have been crazy to me. So I grew up in a part of the country that's very small town, rural, and my mom was a music teacher growing up. So long story short, most people in my town don't really go to college. Many of them don't finish if they do go. And certainly very few, I can count on one hand how many doctors I know, physicians or dentists who have graduated from my high school. So that was never even like on my radar as something that I could potentially be capable of. And so I was really good at music. I went for opera performance and I loved learning about the science of singing, like the anatomy, the physiology, the biomechanics of how these muscles are working to make this crazy sound. And when I graduated from Ithaca, I actually, when all I had to do was sing, I was completely bored. I had no interest in it anymore. I liked learning about it. I didn't really love doing it the way that I thought I did. So when I was at Ithaca, I was recruited. My running joke is that somebody eventually realized I would be kind of funny with a microphone on. Part of opera is you have to go into fitness. Like, you need to be physically fit because you're wearing like 40-pound costumes. You're basically screaming your head off for hours. Right. And so that's what got me into fitness. I had never worked out in my life. So sophomore year of college, I start working out. Somebody said, she's pretty good at this, A, and B, she would be kind of funny on a microphone. So they were like, you should do like for fitness classes, you should teach them. And I was like, there's a TikTok trend right now. Like, what is that one random thing you decided to do that seemed like nothing when you did it, but it changed your whole life? That was mine. Going to the tryouts. And I went to the tryouts. I got the job. I had never taught a group in his class in my life. I had to figure out how to do it. And I got really good at it. And when I graduated and continued in that world, because you can make per hour pretty decent money, I was working in group fitness still because I really enjoyed it. It was paying, my rent. And that's when I started meeting a lot of dentists, physicians, nurses. And I said, wow, I actually have a lot in common with them And I like learning about the anatomy and physiology of exercise. So this all kind of like looped together little loose ends that were happening in my brain throughout the process.
That's actually insane. So, I mean, but in a way, like, all these things are like connected to each other. Like you're doing opera singing, which is through the mouth, and you did group fitness, which was a lot of talking, a lot of like,
yes,
charisma and enthusiasm. And then at the end, you're meeting people that are doctors and dentists already. And did you meet dentists while you're a group fitness instructor?
Yes, but I actually, okay. So ironically, I was teaching group fitness. I did that for about 2 years. I was actually regionally managing a few locations of the Retro Fitness franchise. So I ended up like working up in that industry and I hated managing. I was like, I got to get out of here.
Right.
And okay, this is funny. There was this article that always went around in music school and we would all joke about it. This is true. Music majors have the highest acceptance rate to medical school. Now, the sample size is much lower.
Of course.
So like much fewer people apply, but when we do apply, we get accepted at very high rates.
Right.
So the joke was, oh, if we can't become famous opera singers, we'll just become physicians. And I started thinking about that more and more. And I was like, well, if I wanted to do this, I could. I know I can. I knew one singer who was at Columbia Medical School. And I talked to her and I said, how did you even get there? Like, if I even thought about this,
right,
how would I do it? And that's how she put me on the path. So when I was at Harvard, I thought I wanted to be a physician, not a dentist. I thought I wanted to be an ears, nose, and throat doctor, an otolaryngologist. I shadowed for almost 200 hours in the OR, learning about, you know, otolaryngology, surgical procedures. And during that time, something didn't sit right. And that's when I realized I had a few dentists in my classes. I was an Orange Theory coach in Boston. And I started talking to them about what was unsettling to me about otolaryngology. And they said, well, you know, you should come see what we do because you might like it. So it was right next door.
That's insane. I mean, so you talked to this Columbia medical student, right? Who was, I guess, was a singer. And
she was also an opera singer.
What did she tell you about the process of getting into like, dentistry and maybe not dentistry, but like into a health profession from where you were right now? So at this point, you are a trainer. You're learning about all these different things. You're shadowing now. Where did you go from there? Did you decide that's when you went to Harvard after that part?
Yeah. So it was, that's also kind of a funny story. So I was working on an opera with her.
Okay.
She was playing what's called a pants role, which is where a girl plays a guy. And we were like, I was covering like her love interest. So it was kind of weird. I was like, hey, girl, what's up? But so I noticed I had my fitness textbooks because I was working on a few fitness certifications and she had her medical textbooks.
Right.
Then how'd you get there? Like, what are you doing with those? And she said, well, what are you doing with those? Like, I don't normally see other singers with science textbooks in these companies, you know? And so I talked to her about it. She said it was the best thing she had ever done, but also her parents were physicians. So she already knew a good amount about the profession and I did not have that at all.
Right.
And so I said to her, you know, like, okay, so you majored in music. You were not a science major. I know I'm good at science. I just have never been properly taught. My high school was not good for math and science. So like, what do I do? And that's when she said there are these great things called career changer post-baccalaureate programs, where even though you've majored in whatever, you can go and take just the pre-medical, pre-dental, same thing, requirements. And they will sponsor you to get into medical school or dental school or whatever you want. So I said, well, let me Google this. Obviously, I looked up Columbia's program. Spoiler alert, it's exorbitantly expensive. So I did not go with their program. But I saw the Ivy had it, right? Harvard, Columbia, and Penn actually has one as well. And I said, okay, just for fun, it's not going to happen, but I'm just going to give it a shot. Let me just apply to the Ivy League. Like, what the hell? Let's just go for it. So I did. And then I got accepted to all three. And I was not expecting that. I was planning to apply to other programs. I believe Fordham University has one. Like, there's Bryn Mawr has a really good one. Goucher has a really good one. But I didn't know anything about those. I just saw the Ivy League schools and said, let's go for it. And in an Elle Woods-like moment, I got accepted. So I was like, oh. So I went to Harvard. And that's how I, you know, navigated the process with a bunch of other people who had majored in completely random things and were interested in being physicians.
I had no idea that was a thing.
It is a thing.
Like, we have, even at my job, we have some, you know, hygienists who are like, oh man, I wish I could go to dental school, but I don't have the prereqs set. I'm like, there has to be some kind of program where you can just go to it, maybe do the prereqs, they can kind of endorse you and thing, and then just get in that way. And that's insane. I mean, I feel like not many people know about that.
No, it's definitely a bit of a secret. I think when people, it's like a secret that's in plain sight if you look for it. Like if you Google it, it'll pop up and you'll see lots of schools that offer it. But a lot of people, when they think of post-bac programs, they think of GPA enhancers. I didn't need to enhance my science GPA because I didn't have one, right? I had to start, Just matters worse. When I got there to Harvard, I was so excited. I had just uprooted my whole life. I quit my job. I started working at Orange Theory. I barely had enough in my savings to pay my first month's rent without a paycheck, because you have to obviously train for your job before you do it.
Right.
And you don't make much money while you're training to do it. And so I got to the first day of physics, and they had told me what math concepts to review. And I thought I did a decent job reviewing them. Apparently I did not. It honestly sounded like they were speaking in another language. Like they could have been speaking Mandarin, and I was not speaking Mandarin or speaking English. So I panicked, and I told that there was like a teaching assistant, like a few other students going around helping people throughout the lecture. And I kept saying to them, I don't even know where to begin. Like, I feel like I'm missing basic information and I don't know what it is, but I'm not following you. And they kept saying, oh, you'll just study and you'll figure it out when you study and do the prep. And I was like, no, there's something missing. And the professor kept trying to talk me into the class. I went up to her and said, there's no way. What am I missing? I don't understand why I can't figure out what a vector is, right? Mm-hmm. And I know I'm smart. I know I can do it. But I knew that there was like, if they were here, I was down here and I was missing everything in between. So I ended up realizing through hours and hours of my own research, because they couldn't figure out what I was missing. My math was super bad. So I actually had to spend a year restarting with college algebra, all the way back to college algebra. I took college algebra, pre-calculus, calculus, and I had to literally start from scratch. And I actually had to defer from my program at Harvard for 1 year. They don't normally let people defer, but apparently because I told them I was going to fail, they said, okay, we'll give you a free pass. We'll let you defer. I did. And I did just a year of math. And it was the most heartbreaking thing at the time. I felt like I had failed. Like, why I came there was for the post-bac program. And now I'm not doing the post-bac program. I'm like taking math classes. But it was the best thing that could have happened to me, because when I got back to physics and Gen Chem, my math was perfect. Like I was tutoring other people on, you know, all the math skills they needed to pass these courses. So it was a good thing. It was a blessing in disguise. But some people may end up having to take that route, and people don't know that. A lot of people don't know that they may need to rehab their math or remediate their math, I should say.
If that's not determination, I don't know what is, because I couldn't imagine a whole year of just straight math and then having the energy to continue on and do physics with that math. You know what I mean? Because physics and Gen Chem have a lot of, obviously, as you know, they have a lot of like math in it. So like if you don't have a good background, it's going to be kind of tough to follow in the first place. And then on top of the following of the math, it's like the theory of it. Now, that's the second part. So that's So how long was this program? So you deferred a year. How long was the rest of the program kind of lasting? Because there's a lot of classes you got to take eventually, right? It's from to get the bio, Virgo, math, English, probably to all those prereqs that we have to do.
Well, the good news is I did have the English, right? So that was part of my undergrad. I think most people take some sort of writing class.
Yeah, just like curriculum.
I had to take the two Gen Chems, the two Orgo Chems, the two bio classes, and obviously the two physics classes, everything pretty much with lab.
All right. Oh.
The program is supposed to be 2 years. I took it over the course of 4 years.
Okay.
So I did one math year, right?
Yeah.
Gen Chem and physics the first whole year, or really the second year at this point. The third year I did bio and orgo the whole year. And then I elected to take some upper level bio courses, which was the other best thing I could have done other than remediate my math. I took microbiology, anatomy and physiology. I took, oh gosh, a bunch of things, immunology. I just did like two classes per semester pretty much until I was through. Oh, and biochemistry, of course.
Okay, not bad. It's two classes per semester isn't too bad, but it's still a lot of information the first time really seeing it. Were you like working on the side as you're doing these classes at the time?
Yeah, I was working full time as an Orange Theory coach.
Okay, yeah, so you were still doing that.
Yeah, well, I would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to get to work at like 4:15, 4:30. I would teach from 5 to like usually 10 in the morning. I would stay and do my workout. So I'd usually be home by about noon. And then I would sleep for a few hours. Go to class. All of our classes in that post-bac program were at night. The Harvard College teachers came over and taught the same college classes at the extension school at night. So those of us who had to work could still like participate.
Yeah,
so we took it at night, and then I would be done with class at like 10 p.m. I would rush home, shower, go to bed, wake up at 3 a.m. and do it all again. It was hell. But it was good. It was good. I got it done. So you do what you got to do.
That is insane. That's like, that's basically like going through undergrad. That's what it sounds like. And then also working full time. So like, I mean, I'm close to you. I don't know. I mean, personally, like, I don't know if I would have done that. That's a bit. 10 o'clock and then wake up at 3, go to do work, then go to class. You have tests and stuff probably every week or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So like,
they were wild.
Oh my God. That's insane. So, I mean, you finished the program, right? Year four. Where is your mind at right now? Like, because you know that, you know what else you need to get done, like your personal statement, DAT, all that other stuff. Where in the pro, did you apply the year you finished, or did you take like another year after that? Because now,
so I did those first 3 years, right? Math, prerequisite. I studied for the DAT in 10 weeks, took it on the 11th week because COVID canceled my test a few times.
Yeah.
So my application was finalized by early August, and the DAT went really well, which was good. And then that fourth year, I was doing Zoom interviews as well as taking the upper level bio courses.
COVID. Yeah. So, I mean, I saw on your you did a whole DAT breakdown thing on your Instagram.
Yeah, I did. I did.
You did score very well.
Oh, thank you.
And it really helped you help that you took all those classes like very recently. So I guess, did you use like boot camp, or did you use something like that, or did you just kind of self-study?
I actually did boot camp and booster.
Okay.
I was crazy. I also made like 3,500 Anki cards for all of the biology from both programs, and went through every single card like 3 times. It was wild, but I'm very proud of my bio score, and I'm telling pre-dents, the one subject you actually should strive to do really well on the DAT for your personal being able to survive dental school is bio. Mm-hmm. Period. Don't just aim to get a 17. Aim to get a 30. Like, because it will save you when you get to dental school. Like, the first dental school is all biology anyway, but the first year is like all of that biology except for taxonomy in one. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. So if you know it really well from the DAT, you're already ahead. But yeah, it was very helpful that I had everything fresh. I followed boot camp's general study schedule, but I supplemented with Booster. Booster had just come out with their full DAT prep. So I was afraid to be a guinea pig, especially since I was already a non-traditional student. So I was like, let me go with boot camp and then supplement with Booster. And that was a really good strategy.
And I think when I was saying for the DAT, I think I spent the most time on bio just because there's a lot of, it's a lot of information, but it's very high yield. So, I mean, boot camp was perfect. They already had Anki cards like made for you. So I kind of,
those are mine, by the way.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No way. Those are yours.
Those are, if you got the deck, that's just like straight up 3,000.
No way.
That's
whatever. I can pull it up. But like, Well, they never had oncogods before that. Before you made
yeah.
That's yeah, insane. I'm talking to the person herself.
Hello.
This is literally you. Holy crap. Mind is blown right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, those are mine.
Because those are amazing. Like, I used to bang out, chapter a day, and it would work out.
Yep.
And it's in my brain. Because it was so good to the point where when I took the DET, dude, like, I don't remember any questions. Because I just felt like it was bar for bar, word for word, and I just kind of went through it, I was an autopilot.
Yeah.
Oh my guys, if you're listening right now, like, she is the savant of Anki Blueprint deck. That's insane.
I think now they have a few Anki decks. If it's the one that's just like one massive pack,
They must have just sorted it and used yours, and they put it up into chapters. I'm assuming that's what they did.
That's
what they did now. Oh my god, still blown away.
That was me. I typed everything out. I didn't copy and paste anything. I wanted to type it, and I was crazy.
Some of those are long. I don't know how I even thought of those.
They were crazy.
Jeez.
But it was fun.
Awesome. So did you, you said you spent 10 weeks. That's basically the bootcamp schedule, I believe.
Basically.
Yeah, right. So you took it once. I'm assuming one.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. I was like, I'm not doing this again.
So, I mean, you got your DAT score, and if everyone wants to do like a whole breakdown, just go to her page. It's beautiful, beautifully written, you know, all her scores, everything very transparent. I think I looked at that before I took mine too, just for some last minute encouragement. So you got your DET, and then now where are you now? So you took your DET, now like, is it personal statement time? Is it like kind of, you know, getting everything else together? How'd you kind of, you know, bring all your experiences, all your whole life story, and just kind of put it together in the ADSAS? And when did you submit it? And like, when did you start hearing back from schools, I guess?
Yeah. So the COVID year was a little weird, right? All of the schools told us, like, apply before your DAT is done and we'll consider you before your DAT is in. And then none of the schools did that, which was very funny. Yeah. So I applied before I even knew what my scores were. And I regret that because I wasted a bunch of application fees on schools that were like, oh, she's going to go somewhere else. Like, we're not even going to bother with her, you know? So I didn't know I was going to do that well on the DAT. And so I kind of applied broadly on the East Coast. I started and finished my personal statement well before I took the DAT, though. I started it, I want to say, in like January of that year,
right,
which was, would that have been 2020? Yeah, that was 2020. So I started it in January, and over the course of like 6 months, refined it. I knew the issue with me as an applicant going into it is they were going to say, first of all, you're indecisive. Like, I knew they were going to look at me and be like, this girl can't pick one job to save her life. Why is she going to stick with this one? I knew it was going to happen.
Right.
And I knew they were going to say, okay, so like, you somehow managed to get through Harvard's program, whatever. Like, how do we know you're going to get through dental school? And how do we know you're not going to like jump ship to medical school or something completely random? Like, I think I even had an interviewer say, okay, so what are you going to do next? Become an astronaut?
I think the thing with your journey is that, you know, when you look at, as you're a fitness coach and you're talking to these like dentists and doctors,
I think
their point is like, why not there? Like, why only a dentist? Why only the oral cavity? Why aren't you interested in the whole body at this point? So how'd you kind of like differentiate from that?
Yeah. So that wasn't something I touched on so much in my personal statement. I did want to make, I don't recommend this for everyone applying to dental school, but my personal statement was very much like, how the hell did she get here? Like, this is my story, how I got here. And this is why I know I will make a great dentist. But then during my interviews, I did have a lot of schools say, okay, well, you shadowed in ENT for almost 200 hours. Like, why are you even here? Like, Your scores are great. Your GPA is great. Why are you not doing medical school? And for me, the answer was truly, it's a lot of cancer. And I have a big personality. I'm not sure if you can.
Yeah, I know.
I don't really see myself as the person walking into a patient's room and sitting down with them and saying, you have 2 months left. Like, I don't see that. I don't see me being that person. I know I can do it very humbly, respectfully, and very empathetically, but it was very depressing to me. It's not my energy. I could do it. Should I do it? I don't think being able to do something and then like should do something don't go in the same box for me. So I saw enough like cancer resections, pre-flaps, crazy, awful things. And the physicians, and this is no hate to them at all, but I was shocked and saddened by how nonchalant they were about it. They're like, oh yeah, we're going to take this person's jaw out, their tongue out, their larynx out. They're never going to talk again. They're never going to taste again. This is going to be a great day. And I was like, whoa, this is not a great day. We're ruining someone's life. Literally, I mean, cancer ruined their life, right? Like we're extending the life that they have.
Worse.
But we're like ruining that. I can't imagine never tasting or speaking again. Clearly I talk a lot. Like I can't imagine that.
Right.
So that's when I started seeing, actually there were some OMFS physicians and residents in some of the surgeries I was in with ENT. And that's when they said like, oh, we went to dental school. And I actually did not believe them. I was like, no, you had to be in medical school to be here. And they were like,
yeah.
In medical school now.
Yeah.
It was super weird. But yeah, so that for me was the thing I had to explain.
Right.
And I did have some interviewers come back at me. There was this one guy, he was, I'm not going to say what school he was from, but he was very dismissive and like, okay, well, even if you're not going to be the physician taking out that person's larynx and tongue, they're going to come back to you as the dentist. How are you going to treat them? And I was like, I can treat someone who has no tongue and has like a reconstructed jaw. I just don't want to be the one taking out their tongue and jaw and telling them they're going to die imminently. Right. Like,
yeah,
I want to refer that to people who do that all day. And I want to do the things that, you know, people leave happy. I don't, you know, some patients, of course, leave upset for various reasons. But for the most part, people leave the dental office generally happier than they entered. They're not in pain anymore. Their filling is done. You know, I want to be that person. Right. So that's what I explained in my interview.
Of course. I mean, that's insane. So when did you, submit it? You said late, early August it was finalized?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Then when did you get like your first interview, I guess?
I think it was like the end of September. And that was terrifying to me because I did what you're not supposed to do. I went on Student Doctor Network and, you know, yeah, I was seeing all these other people get interviews. And I was like, everyone,
I've been doing the same thing. Because I submitted my stuff like June 5th. So I've been all over it. I've been looking at it every now and then. I just see like more pop up. I'm like, are these people like actually real or like they're just faking it? There's no like verification method, I don't think, on there. So how many schools did you end up applying to?
I applied to 10.
10. Okay. That's like a usual.
10.
Yeah. And you're from, so you kind of applied, you know, the Columbias, did you apply to Stony Brook at all?
No, I did not, because I only applied to schools that had prerequisites that I had or was able to get by the time I matriculated. And Stony Brook has a lot of prereqs.
Yeah.
Or at the very least they did when I applied. I don't know if it's changed, but it was too many for me to fit in the time period.
Yeah. Cause I go to them now. So I was wondering if
you
every year. So,
What's your major?
I'm a bio and business major. I'm like double majoring because they don't have a minor. So I just couldn't do a business minor. So I was like, yeah, whatever.
Do the whole thing.
Because at the time I think it was, I'm like, my freshman year was COVID basically, like after COVID. So it's still online. So, business classes are easy. You can take more classes because they're all online, so you can get them done.
Oh yeah,
class and stuff. So I was able to take advantage of that, doing, you know, summer classes, winter classes, whatever. But it's working out. So I'm in my final year now.
Sick, and that's going to be so helpful for dentistry too.
Yeah,
dentistry is a lot of business.
There is a lot. So I mean, that I see it in my job every day. So like, it's something that it'll be good to have background knowledge, even if it's just like finance or something. There's always dental finances, right? So we shall see, but. Yeah. But yeah, so
I love that.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. So, how'd your interviews go? Were they dry, insightful? Did they kind of have a lot of energy? Was it more conversation? Like, was it, how was it for you?
It was a mix. I had, again, at least one interviewer, I think it was maybe like two or three, who tried to roast the hell out of me and be like, you're going to jump ship. Like, you can't tell me I'm wrong. And I was like, well, I can tell you you're wrong because I know myself better than you do. You just met me.
Right.
And I don't put up with a lot of BS, so I just kind of was like, no, like you're wrong, respectfully, but no, you're wrong. I think some interviewers, they like to intimidate, right, and see how you respond to intimidation.
Right.
What's you saying in front of all of your peers and like have had to kiss your female friends because they're dressed up as a boy on stage in front of everyone, you know, when you're straight or like whatever, like what's you had to do something very uncomfortable in front of a large group of people? Yeah. One person roasting me in an interview is really not going to bother me. So I was like, okay, thank you. I appreciate your feedback, but respectfully, no. For the most part, they were very conversational. People were really interested in my background and really just wanted to hear more about, you know, how I got here.
Of course.
And also they wanted to know what I had seen. I think they were very curious to make sure that the shadowing experience I had was meaningful, right? It wasn't just like sitting in the office and pretending I was shadowing. Like, they asked me a lot about different cases I had seen, different things I had experienced shadowing, even the ENT stuff. They wanted to know, like, oh, what procedures did you see when you were in the hospital? And so I was able to go over that at length. But yeah, for the most part, they were very conversational. But again, there were a few that tried to rattle me. And I know that I think some of them get, you do learn a lot about someone when they're kind of off kilter and you've startled them. I like to think I handled those interviewers well, but to me, I was just like, if you're not going to like me, you're not going to like me. That's okay.
Yeah.
But you know, you can't let it ruin the experience for you.
Right.
So, but for the most part, they were really lovely.
Yeah. And you had them all over Zoom. So like, did you feel like that was harder because it wasn't face to face, or was it kind of this, did you think it was the same? I don't know.
For me, it felt actually easier because again, with my work schedule, like you don't work like a 9-to-5 when you work in group fitness. You have to work a few hours basically every day to be able to make enough to pay your rent, especially in Boston.
Right.
So it was helpful for me to be able to, like, there were a few interviews where I taught the first two classes of the day. Like, I got up at 3, I went, I taught my classes, I rushed home, put on a blazer, pulled my hair down, sat up the laptop, and was in an interview by like 9:30. You know, so it was exhausting, but I found that, like, looking at the camera when I was speaking and then looking at the person when they were speaking, I felt reasonably well connected with them, but I mean, only they know. I only know what I felt.
I just thought about this recently, looking at the camera. Like, when you look at, I'm looking at you right now because you're the one talking. When I'm talking to you, I'm looking at you instead of the camera.
Right.
So when they're looking,
but then the eye contact's not really
exactly.
There, so it's helpful to look at that thing.
All my interviews, I will keep that in mind. I'll practice that way.
Yeah,
I have.
Yeah,
you know. So that's hilarious. So I mean, how'd you end up at Penn after that? So you must have at your Penn interview, do they have like a presentation, and do they go into interviews and like group sessions? How does that kind of work?
So we did, the way that Penn does interviews is like some of the schools do like 50, 60 kids in one interview. Penn is like 6 to 9 students at a time. So it's a very small group. Again, it was a Zoom interview. So we like introduced ourselves to the group, talked a little bit about ourselves. And then Dr. Olivia Sheridan was the head of admissions at that time. She was the one who went in and really dug deep into like, what does the Penn curriculum look like?
Okay.
And one thing about the Ivy Leagues is like, you can tell they have money, right? Like, Harvard, I found actually for me was the humblest of the three Ivies when it came to the postdocs. Like, I found that they were very humble, down to earth people. A lot of people like me from more disadvantaged backgrounds. And I really loved that, but I also loved the resources. Like, when you're asked for anything at Harvard, you're going to get it, right? And so once I had been accepted to a few schools, I looked at who I'd been accepted to, and I knew I only had the money to put down one deposit. So I had to pick one school and that was it. Every other interview I canceled because I was like, we're done. I got three really good acceptances right away. And I was like, okay, it's going to be one of these three schools and then I'm going.
Right.
So I knew Penn was an Ivy. So I knew the experience from being at Harvard. I knew the experience would be similar in terms of like the financial resources of the school. I liked the fact that they had fully funded dual degree programs, which unfortunately now they're no longer fully funded dual degree programs. They're partially funded. But at the time that I applied and got in, I actually am in the dual degree program, fully funded at that time. So I liked that. I liked the fact that there were a lot of honors programs, but not just for specialties, right? If you want to be a general dentist, there are a ton of different honors programs that Penn has, like working with vulnerable populations. I'm doing the community oral health honors program this year. I'm super excited about it. Awesome. And there's a lot of options, right? A lot of ways for you to add where you want or just do the minimum and you'll still have a great education at the end of it. So I just felt the most at home. Also talking to the people, again, it was like a bunch of people who do amazing things, but I didn't feel like they were trying to say to me, like, we're better than all the other dental schools. Some of the schools you go to the interviews and you feel like they're trying to convince you that they're the best. And I don't like that. Like, that's one thing I liked about Harvard. They didn't have to convince you that they were the best. They just were. So they were just very nice and humble. And I liked that. And I felt a similar vibe from Penn. So I was like, I think this is where I belong. And yeah, I just went for it.
Yeah. So you love that Penn interview. You kind of liked how, what they had to offer, what kind of resources they had to offer. So you accepted it, I'm assuming.
Yes, I did.
Well, so from that acceptance, what did you do after that? Did you just kind of like chill and kind of take it a little easier until school started, or did you go right away into it?
I was still taking those upper level bio courses, right, and I wanted to finish them. So I still took two.
Right.
The first thing I did, and I'm glad I did this, I would recommend this to you guys when you get accepted, which you definitely will, is start looking for housing immediately and don't wait for the landlords to post their vacancies. So it's actually kind of funny. My mom started looking, and I'm 30 years old now. I was 28 when I got accepted. I was like, Mom, stop looking for housing for me. I'm an adult. I can do it myself. And she was like, no. Like, I bet I can find someone before you can, like in terms of landlord. And I was like, all right, deal. She won. She found a landlord. And they didn't have any listings on, but she was like, you should email them and tell them that you're going to be a student and that you want to be on their list when they send listings.
Yeah.
So I did. And they immediately said, oh, we were actually going to post these next week, but you can have the first pick. Which listing would you like? So that's exactly what I did. So I signed my lease in, to the place that I still live now, in like January, like right after I accepted Penn, within a few days I had a place lined up to live. So yeah, and then just basically tried to figure out how I was going to get from Boston down to Philly. I figured out that because my new place actually has a backyard, I could get a dog. So I started looking into where I wanted to get my puppy, looking into ethical breeders or rescues. I ended up going with an ethical breeder, and yeah, just kind of like getting things together on top of the two classes I was taking that semester already. That was already in the plan.
And a funny thing about the mom thing, like I used to live in New Jersey before high school. So when we got to this, I live in Long Island now.
Okay.
You know where that is?
Yes, I do.
Some people, I had no idea what it was before I even got here. So I did not know it was a New York thing. Funny. No, I thought it was like
totally a New York thing.
Yeah, it is. But like, this house that we're in now, like, it wasn't even, the realtor that we had no idea it was even available. My mom found it, and then we bought.
Oh my gosh!
So like, it was like a last minute thing. We were gonna live in this community, and then we ended up doing it. And she's like, "Moms have that instinctive like scavenging.
They do.
You know what I mean?
Moms, no, they just know.
They know. So you gotta trust your mom's kids. You gotta trust your mom. I got it. They know best.
Totally.
That's why you're hearing me right now.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom definitely saved me with the housing.
All right. Yeah. So
exactly.
Yeah. You got accepted. Your school probably started in that fall, I'm assuming, right? So what were your expectations going into? What? What was that?
Oh, sorry. Did something happen?
No, I thought you said something, but I didn't hear.
I don't think you said.
All right. Cool.
No, you're good.
Yeah. All right. Cool. I was just saying. So what were your expectations going into D1? You're like, were you kind of nervous? Were you kind of just excited to get it going? And what did you kind of feel that whole first year of Dallin School?
I was terrified. I knew it was going to be crazy. I knew it was going to be very difficult. I suspected it was going to be the hardest thing I've ever done. And it exceeded my expectations in terms of being the hardest thing I've ever done. Definitely fulfilled that for sure, especially second semester of D1. First semester of D1, Penn is pretty good at like easing you into it, even though it doesn't feel like it at the time. But once you're through the first semester, you're like, wow, they really like made it easy at the beginning. Even though at the beginning you feel like it's the hardest thing ever. But then it gets crazy. Like the spring semester of D1 and the fall semester of D2 are absolutely, that was the worst year I think of my life. Like it was so hard, so stressful. And I had a puppy. And I had a puppy on top of all of it because I'm crazy. But you know, she helped make it fun. So yeah, I knew it was going to be tough, but it's kind of nice, at least in my opinion, to go in with high expectations in terms of like, this is going to be really hard. This is my full-time job. People don't realize that when they come to dental school, it's not like undergrad. It is your full-time job and then some when you're in dental school. And because I had worked full-time jobs, because I had worked crazy schedules, for me, that transition maybe was more seamless than it could have been for others. I'm not sure because I didn't live their experience. I only know mine. But for me, it was actually nice to be on a normal sleep schedule, which I hadn't had in years. Oh, I think your sound is off, by the way, Suraj. There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
All right, I think there was a delay before because I was talking and then like the response was a little later, but whatever. It's all good now.
It's all good.
Yeah, so you don't have to work that freaking 10 p.m., wake up at 3 o'clock job anymore. You basically go to school. So like, what was like the curriculum like? Was it basically like what you were saying before? Was it just straight science-based courses? And then when did you guys kind of start doing stuff in clinic at Penn?
Right away, within a few weeks of starting. Yeah, so for the most part, the first year is like basic sciences, right? But they throw in dental anatomy. They get you in the stim lab holding a handpiece, which is something I really liked about Penn. The first semester, within like, I think 3 weeks of starting school, you're already in the sim clinic. You're already in clinic assisting third and fourth years within, I would say, maybe a month and a half latest. Wow. Like, it's very quick. Yeah. Cool. They get you right in. And I remember a lot of people were very anxious about that. They were like, I don't even know what I'm doing yet. Like, why am I here? But that's how you learn on jobs too, right? Like when you start a new job, they just throw you in and you just gotta roll with the punches.
So that's supposed to be to learn.
I liked it. Yeah, exactly. I kind of liked it. I knew I didn't know what I was doing. So I would say to the student, what is it that you asked for? Can you write it down? And where do I go get it? And then I would just, you know, ask around until somebody helped me find it for my student. So you learn by doing, even if it's trial by fire, it's good.
Yeah.
You know?
What were the things that you saw, right? So these are D3, D4, so doing extractions and crazier, more like advanced procedures, I guess you would say. What did you, like, kind of get from that? What were some crazy things that you saw? Or, like, was it all kind of like a punch in the face for you? Like, were you not expecting to see some of the stuff that you did that early?
No. The way that Penn works is our specialty clinics are where they do the crazy things, like extractions, which I think extractions are fun, I'm not gonna lie. So like the extractions, the complicated endo, we do a little bit of endo. I think in the main clinic, although I'm not actually sure, to be continued. I'm still finding that out myself. But for the most part, it was crown preps, restoration, getting referrals to the specialty clinic. You do a little bit of work in the specialty clinics, and you can certainly ask for more in the first and second year. But we really actually didn't start in the specialty clinic, seeing like the crazy stuff,
right,
until this year, actually this summer.
Gotcha.
Makes sense. So it went right into when we did it. But I think some of the things that just like blew my mind were just how many supplies that you need. And when you're shadowing in a dental clinic where there's like a dental assistant doing all that, you don't realize how much goes into it. No. Yeah, it's crazy. So it was wild to like see, like they had this huge setup that they worked on for like 30 minutes before the patient even started, and they still needed this and that and this and that, and you know, so that was very interesting to me. And I didn't know what things like Fuji are. I didn't know what a base was. I didn't know, you know, what glass ionomer was. So like they would ask for these things, and sometimes I was like, what language are you speaking? So again, trial by fire is good.
They say bass, you start singing.
About that.
Yeah. No, I mean that's the straight truth. I mean, even to this day, like at my work, there's so many things, like so many small things, I have no idea where they are, what they are, what do they call, what each doctor, because each doctor will call them different things, bro. So it's like,
right,
can we have a general language,
just like one name?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
but you know, that's where you have to ask them, and like, can you tell me what it is? Next time I want to ask you again, basically. Like, yeah, exactly. I'll try to remember as best as I can. So,
yeah.
Hilarious. So, I mean, alongside this assisting that you're doing, you're also doing like regular coursework, right? So, was that first year pretty much all like coursework based / assisting? And then was D2 kind of more getting into clinical and seeing patients, or how did that kind of work?
So first year is all assisting and sim clinic, and specifically in sim clinic, it's like restorative. So like filling, drilling and filling, right? Yeah. Second year is prosthodontic, fixed and removable, and like partial dentures and stuff like that. So I would say that the second year is more dental specific, although we still did a lot of like full body biology, like body systems, respiratory system, you know, pathologies of the different systems, etc. But for the most part, I would say like the general, like medical school-esque curriculum was mostly first year,
right,
and then continued a bit into the second year, but was also then more specific dentistry curriculum second year. And then third year, this summer, actually, in May, we started in the clinic. And that was, it's funny because actually before we started, everyone was like, oh my gosh, like, you're going to be so happy in the clinic. Like, this is going to be the best thing for you. And I knew it would, and it is, but there was, none of us knew what we didn't know at that point. And for at least a pen, the computer system is the part that gets you.
I saw your story on this couple weeks ago.
Axiom is the worst thing to face the planet. I went into clinic expecting it to like be like this breath of fresh air, and I was so stressed because I was like, I don't even know how to order like lidocaine. How do I do that on this computer, you know? But again, trial by fire, we figured it out. I try to, similar to you, kind of say like, show me once and then I'll make sure that I know it for the next time. And sometimes you still mess up, but I think the faculty are very good at recognizing like you're trying.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for the most part, our faculty are very good about, you know, if they have to tell you something twice, they're not going to give you too much crap for it, but it does happen. So once I got used to the computer more, now I feel more comfortable.
Right.
And now I'm really actually enjoying clinic because I'm not just like saying, how do I input this? Where am I going to find the patient's medical history? How do I update it? How do I refer a patient to another clinic? Like, blah. So
you're just doing it now.
Yeah, now I'm just doing it.
So now you have to focus on like the fine details, I guess I would say.
Oh, yeah.
So now it's kind of more like, you know, it's more fun, I guess you could say. So,
oh, yeah. It's way more fun because now especially too when you start in the clinic. I'm assuming this is the same for pretty much all dental schools. I could be wrong. When you first start, you're getting a lot of patients who need a treatment plan, right? So you're doing a lot of data collection, data input. You're actually not really doing much dentistry at all. Mm. You're examining the patient. You're figuring out what they need. You're figuring out what x-rays to get. You're like analyzing the x-rays and interpreting them. And then you're just making a treatment plan. But once the patient has a treatment plan, then you can start it and say, okay, so we're going to start with your prophy. Then we're going to do your filling on number 19. Then we're going to work on that crown on number 30. You know, like, yeah, exactly. Like then you can actually do the dentistry.
Right. And so how many like students in your class at Penn?
Yeah, 200-ish.
Okay. So still, okay.
Just under 200.
Gotcha. So, I mean, I forgot to ask, but was that first year like integrated with the med school there?
No. And that's one of the reasons actually that I loved Penn because, okay, this may be an unpopular opinion, but my pre-med advisor at Harvard said that putting dental students in the medical school curriculum is the laziest, cheapest thing you can do. And I actually kind of agree with him. Not fully, but I do not want or need to know how to do a rectal exam or an ultrasound. I'm never going to do one.
True.
Ever. If a patient tells me they're having poopy problems, I'm going to refer them to somebody who deals with that. I'm not dealing with that side of the body, right?
Yeah.
So to me, it didn't make sense to learn the exact same at the medical school because we're not using it the same at the medical school.
Right.
Penn teaches essentially the medical school curriculum, but with a focus on oral health. So when they talk about Crohn's, for example, they don't just like show you all of the digestive issues, right? They show you the intraoral findings that you'll see with Crohn's disease. They'll show you the intraoral findings with lupus, you know? Mm-hmm. You're not just seeing the systemic results. And I really like that and really appreciate that because it also made it more relevant for me, more palatable for me. And we were really only taught the things that like we may do one day. I'm never going to do an ultrasound.
Right.
I'm never going to do one. Right. Never going to do a rectal. I'm never going to do like a full body exam. I'm going to do a head and neck exam and I need to know how to do a good one. So that's what I want to know.
Yeah. And I know specifically because I have some friends. I have a friend that went to Harvard from Stony Brook. She's a now D2, and like on their Instagram or whatever, like they're welcoming the D2 students into the dental school now. So they've been in the medical school for the whole year, and I never had like a good opinion on it because obviously I'm not there, but like I thought that'd be cool to know about the medical school to do their curriculum for the first year, but now that you say that, like, because the different perspectives to it, you know, like,
yeah.
What Penn is doing, they're kind of doing both. They're doing, you know, a focus on dental medicine. That's what you're kind of aiming to do, right? So, like, information pertaining to both medicine and dentistry combined, at least going into one direction towards what your end goal is, that'd be pretty helpful. But that's interesting. I know Stony Brook also has, I'm not sure if they're in the med school. They might do the same thing as Penn. I'm not 100% sure, but like,
I'm not sure either. Yeah.
But that's definitely something that like, you know, pre-dentals maybe should look into, you know, if they're interested, 100%. You know, if they're fortunate enough to have an option to go to different schools that have these different curriculums, definitely something to look into. So, I mean, you're now D3, right? So you basically just started D3.
In May.
This summer. Okay. So yeah. So, I mean, what have you like done so far? Have you got into any crazy obstacles yet at this point, clinic wise?
Axiom.
Axiom.
No, I will say so. One of the interesting things for our cohort is because we also like were in COVID times. Most of us have not been going to class, which I know for a fact the school does not like. But if I can watch something on 3x speed at home with a Google extension with a dog in my lap, like I'm going to do that. I'm not going in person. And I know that they don't like that we do that. I acknowledge that it's not ideal for the teacher, but I'm the student and I'm paying for my education. So I'm going to do my education the way that works best for me.
Right.
And as someone with ADHD, that works best for me to do it in my own time, in my own space, with whatever I need, like a fidget spinner or whatever, to keep my hands busy.
Yeah.
And so when we transitioned to clinic, it was culture shock, I think, for all of us. I can't speak for all my classmates, but I think we all felt it. We went from never going into the dental school except for like for our once a week assisting in clinic and our a few times a week sim lab session to every single day, basically 9 to 5 or 1 to 8, like every single day. And that was a huge transition for a lot of people. Now, for me, it kind of felt like going back to working full time, but with a more straightforward schedule. But even just getting back on a very regimented schedule was a culture shock. I kept, the first few days, I couldn't sleep at night because I was so afraid I would miss my alarm. And when you're watching lectures in your own time, it's okay if you oversleep. When you have a patient coming in at 9:30, it's not okay to oversleep.
You gotta be there.
So, it was really stressful to kind of get back into that very quickly. But that and Axiom was very hard. I ended up, for me, again, because I have ADHD and I get a little overwhelmed when there's like lots of other sounds happening around me and lots of other people like looking over my shoulder. I ended up doing a lot of my learning of Axiom at home. We at Penn, at least for now, hopefully this continues forever, we can access our medical charting system on our own laptops. They have a very secure system to be able to log you in. So it's, very secure. Yep. But it was helpful for me to look at radiographs and interpret them and figure out how to input my findings at home. It took very long, but it was like, okay, I'm in a stress-free environment. I can figure out how to do this at home. What codes do I need? I can figure out how to do that at home. What do I think the treatment plan is going to be? Well, let me think about it and put it in like a rough draft at home without a patient sitting there looking at me and without my faculty like staring at me like, I'm sticking at it, So yeah. That was, I think, a big obstacle, but it was time well spent, in my opinion.
Right. And so like what kind of procedures have you done so far? Have you done like what kind of stuff have you done so far in clinic, I guess, as a with patients of your own?
Yeah. So I would say in the main clinic, I've done a good number of restorations, a lot of class twos. I've been doing class twos like every time and I'm like, can someone just come in with an easy class one? Like, come on. But no, so I've been getting very well acquainted with my Paladent.
Listen.
A ton of propies. You do a ton of propies in your first year. SRPs. I have a few crown preps actually this week coming up, assuming the patients show up. Assuming. But it's a mixed bag. Some people, have done a bunch of crown preps and like no restos. Other people have done like all propies and nothing else. The good thing about at least my group leader is he's very intentional. He makes sure that we all get everything we need done. So I'm not worried about the fact that, I haven't done my first crown prep on a real patient yet, but my friends have done like 3 or 4. I'm not worried about that. I know it'll all work out in the end. And it just depends on what your patients need. Not every patient needs a crown prep. Now, with the specialty clinics, we go on rotations at least once a week. Usually it's multiple times a week. Depending on the specialty. Perio, you just assist. Endo, you do some root canals on extracted teeth. And then for the most part, this year, you just assist. Oral surgery, they just throw you in. They're like, all right, you're going to extract this tooth. I'm like, all right. So I've been really enjoying oral surgery because I've been doing so much. Every time I go there, I don't want to specialize in it. I just like going to that rotation. Let me be clear. I do not want to be an oral surgeon. But I like going in and not just assisting. Like I like actually being able to do something.
Yeah,
same with peds, the pediatric clinic. We get to do a lot with the kids, not just assist. So yeah, it kind of depends on the clinic. It depends on what you're doing. I think ortho, for the most part, you're just assisting.
Right.
I haven't done ortho yet. But yeah. Oh, and we have a personalized care suite for people with disabilities. And I know that we will at some point during the year work with patients who are like in wheelchairs or who have various learning disabilities or cognitive issues. And so that'll be really exciting. I haven't been in that rotation yet, but it is cool. It's kind of like a mixed bag to kind of see what you're going to get out that day.
That's super cool. I mean, so like looking back now, like, do you just feel like you've gotten so much better? Actually, first of all, I feel like your patient care skills are really good. Was that true? I was hoping you'd say, but yeah.
Well, I guess it depends on which of my patients you have. No, I'm just kidding. I think one of the things that's hard as a dental student providing care in a dental school is a lot of patients don't realize how much patience they need to have. A treatment plan, to make one treatment plan, I've had it take 3 separate visits because it, like in that particular case that I'm thinking of, it was so complex and it required so much input from different residents, from different specialty clinics. And people, they think they're going to come in and get a clean their first day. And it's like, you're going to be lucky if you leave here with your x-rays done. Because I got to gather like your whole medical history, and people don't understand why I need to know that they're on birth control. You know, like there's a lot of, I don't want to say arguing, but like educating patients. Like there's a reason I'm asking this. I'm not just asking this to be intrusive.
Yeah.
But I like to think I'm good with my patients. I've also gotten very lucky. I've had the most wonderful patients thus far. I really haven't had any issues, but yeah.
Got it. I mean, so you said you weren't interested in OMFS, but
no.
What is your, you're D3, so you still have some time, I guess, but like,
yeah.
Do you have a plan after you graduate? Do you want to go to like a general practice residency, or do you kind of want to do something else?
Well, I'm in the National Health Service Corps, so I'm doing the 3-year scholarship, 3 years of work, full-time, for 3 years of pay, because I did not realize it was even an option when I started at Penn. But I'm glad I didn't apply before my first year because I didn't know if I wanted to specialize. I now know that I'm really not interested in any specialty except potentially peds, which is funny because I came in dead set against pediatric dentistry and now I'm thinking about it. So that's ironic. And also with the National Health Service Corps, you can only do pediatric dentistry or some sort of general dentistry. You can go into like geriatrics a little more in depth, but you're very limited in terms of what you can do. If you want to be a periodontist, you should not apply to NHSC because you're going to be tied down for at least, 2, 3, 4 years after you graduate, right? So I'm thinking about peds. I'm thinking about general.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other specialties, I know that they get quicker with practice, certainly, but all of those procedures feel very long and lengthy to me. And I don't love that for myself.
Right. I mean, so that scholarship, you have to do like 3 years right after you graduate. It can't be like down the line.
No, you have to do it right after you graduate or right after a general practice residency, peds residency, and you have to go right into that. Like you can't take a few years, then do peds, then do any, like you gotta go right away.
And would that be would that be near Penn?
It could be. There are, you end up working in a federally qualified health center in a health profession shortage area, so a HIPSA. So there are federally qualified health centers all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot in rural areas. And although I grew up in a rural area, I would prefer not to go back, but I also know I can survive in one because I've done it before, right? There are a lot in Philly, actually, a lot of areas that don't have enough access to care. So there are options. I would think I would like to stay in this area, although, I'm open-minded. If I end up going somewhere totally random, like Seattle, like I would do it.
Why not, right? You've been
why not?
I mean, that's crazy. I mean, I feel like you'd be great wherever you're going to go.
Thank you.
Honestly,
I
think, yeah, I mean, it's so early, but people even ask me sometimes, like, what specialty you want to go to? I'm like, dude, there's no way you can choose. Like, I was like, what? The goal is to get in dental school first, and then I guess figure it out. Because once you're in there, that's when you realize like how what it takes, I guess.
Yeah.
To get through everything, and then on top of that, go through more schooling just to get to a certain point in your life. But I met so many like oral surgeons, general dentists. It's just like it's a lot of good input just to know what you want to do. So, I mean, as for right now, like where do you find yourself in the next year, 2 years? Like, what is your kind of goal throughout these very clinical based years at Penn?
Oh, that's a good question. I definitely see myself focusing on getting my speed up on what I do. Again, as someone with ADHD, sometimes I get flustered if I don't like have a really set specific plan. So I think getting better at like being very specific about what needs to happen in what order to make things go as quickly as possible. That for me is a priority. And also figuring out if I want to do peds or general is a huge priority, because I need to make that decision and go for it. You know, whatever it is, I got to go for it.
Yeah. So. That's great. And also I wanted to ask, like, how is the digital dentistry at Penn? You said there's a lot of resources.
How advanced
is it? And like, how are clinics like, how is clinic like? Like, how is the kind of the feel of the school? You know, how's the faculty? How's the faculty staff ratio? How's the kind of social environment at Penn?
Oh, this is a good question. So I'm going to start back with digital dentistry. Yes. We have a CAD/CAM lab with a bunch of like CAD/CAM setups, and they're churning out crowns and bridges all day. Nice. So we do all of our own like in-house crowns and bridges. We send out things like night guards, denture. Well, once we make the, you know, like the wax up denture, we send it out to get like the final fabrication process. PSN crowns, we don't make in-house. So anything that has like a metal on it, we don't do that in-house. But just like your general ceramic crown, printed or carved literally downstairs in our CAD/CAM lab. And there is a lot of research that Penn does into CAD/CAM. So I know like one of my classmates has been doing a ton of research on different CAD/CAM materials and all sorts of stuff that I know nothing about. and he's been crushing it. So
that's good.
Big CAD/CAM school. We love CAD/CAM here. But they also teach you how to do like the traditional, like take the, you know, PBS impression, send it to a lab, have them fabricate it. We do that too.
Right.
Now, when it comes to just like the general vibe of the school, I will say one of Penn's issues right now is we do not have enough faculty for the number of students we have. And the school knows that. They know it's a problem. I don't know what they're doing on the back end to work on it. I'm sure somebody somewhere in admin is working on it. I'm not privy to that kind of information, so I don't know. But we definitely have like not enough instructors for the number of students.
Yeah.
Said, for me personally, I don't mind that. Like, I don't want someone holding my hand every step of the way. I want to have to do some things on my own, like especially downstairs in sim clinic where it's not a real patient we have in stake. It's okay if I messed up a tooth and I have to start over. If practice makes better, right? So if I have to start over a few times,
right,
it is what it is.
It's true.
But then like upstairs in the main clinic, sometimes we are like very much low on faculty. Like maybe someone gets sick and all of a sudden you have so many students working with just one faculty member. And so that can get a little tricky.
Yeah.
I will say also when it comes to Penn's like general like social vibe, it depends on the class. So some classes like bound, like some cohorts are more social with each other than others. I feel like I found my people in my class, so I'm very excited about that. But other classes, I think, you know, do a ton of stuff like as a huge class, and our class, I think we splinter off a little more and we do some events together, but you know, not a ton. So it depends on the cohort. It depends on how stressed everybody is. But there are lots of opportunities for you to meet other people and work with other people if you want them. You have to seek out a certain number of things. I always I think one of the things that's hard about dental schools is we pay this exorbitant price for the school. So you even though this is not realistic, you expect the school to be perfect and you expect everything to be handed to you on a silver platter, and it will never be handed to you on a silver platter, ever. But especially when I hear about some schools are like, allegedly, I don't know if this is true, but I've heard like some schools are like failing their students over one class and making them redo the whole year. That doesn't happen here. Like, it is very like, they'll get you through unless something crazy comes up. And sometimes crazy things do come up, and that's okay.
Right.
But we're not having, you know, like 5, 6, 7, whatever students every year failing the year and having to retake it. That just doesn't happen here. So I feel very supported here.
That's cool.
Even though, of course, like every other dental school, Penn has its problems. I'm not going to lie about that. And they would not lie about it either. There's no such thing as perfect school, and you're never going to find one. So, you know, it is what it is. But I really like it.
That's awesome. Penn is definitely one of the schools I applied to. So I'm looking forward to getting back from them sooner rather than later, hopefully. But we'll see. We'll see how you know, of course. So do you have like any last minute pre-dental advice for some people that, you know, are maybe going through the application process or just kind of deciding whether or not, you know, dentistry is kind of right for them?
Yeah, I would say shadow outside of dentistry and inside of dentistry. Don't just shadow a dentist. And this is what people have issues with. This is what people don't do right as pre-meds either. They just shadow physicians and they're like, I can do this. No, you should shadow, if you're thinking about dentistry, in my opinion, you should shadow physicians. Mm-hmm. You should shadow a few different specialties, but mainly general dentistry, because that's what you're doing in dental school, right? For the most part. Right. You should shadow even things like physical therapist, speech pathologist, optometrist. Like, there are so many health careers out there. And dentistry is definitely not going to be for everyone. It's very hands-on. It's very artsy. I love that about dentistry, but not everybody does.
Right.
So you should shadow in multiple fields and be open-minded to every single one, because you never know which one is going to love you. I never knew that dentistry was going to be the one that grabbed me and said, yes, this is where you belong. I would have never guessed, but here I am and I love it. So.
All right. I mean, thank you for sharing your story. It was really inspiring, and I'm sure it's going to be inspired a lot of people that listen to this, that like somebody as a professional opera singer turned fitness instructor, continued fitness instructor, became a Harvard, was a post-bachelor program person, did all the prereqs, and then got into Penn Dental, and now is like in her D2 year. That's just like...
D3 year.
It's been a long night. D3 year. But but something that it's just such an inspiring story you really share with us today, and I really appreciate you coming on. And Kendra, I hope wish you all the best. We'll talk after this too if you want. But
yeah,
I really appreciated you coming on. I really hope that you know, I know you're gonna do great things in the future. You have 2 more years left.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
we're getting there.
Yeah. So thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it, and we'll probably chat soon, very soon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. I love that you brought this podcast. That's great.
Thank you so much.